Between drafting your new novel, building your lore bible, or meeting with your critique group, who has time to stress about website security? As a writer, your website is your digital face to the world that lets people know about your work and where they can find it. Securing your website means less stress about anyone disrupting that important outlet. Kinsta offers managed hosting for WordPress with lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 human-only customer support. They're available in multiple languages and ready to assist regardless of site complexity. It's complete peace of mind knowing your WordPress site is always secure, online, and performing at its best. Kinsta provides enterprise-grade security and is one of the few hosting providers for WordPress with SOC 2 and other certifications that guarantee the highest level security for your website. And Kinsta customers can experience up to 200% faster sites by simply moving their WordPress sites to the platform. They even have user-friendly custom dashboard called My Kinsta that makes managing your site or multiple sites a breeze. And if you're moving from another host, they offer unlimited expert-led migrations to ensure a smooth transition so you won't experience any downtime. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit KINSTA.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 20, Episode 22.
This is Writing Excuses.
The Lens of Time!
I'm Dan.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Erin.
And this is Doctor Who.
So we've been talking about these different lenses that you can look at a story through. We're looking at the idea of where and when, and time is one of the big lenses. You don't have to be working on a historical piece of fiction to be thinking about time. All stories move through time, even if it's only for a moment. So we're going to be talking about time as your setting. The differences between a story that's set during the day versus at night, or even a scene or a moment. We're going to be talking about how you can use time to your advantage. Not so much in a structural way, but more in that sense of controlling the reader's experience of the story and the character and the setting.
We are going to be doing that. And we're starting now.
When you are sitting down to think about a story, I know, Erin, that you often start with a voice and that you are very much thinking about the character. How much is the character, at that stage, are you thinking about the win of the character?
I think a lot. So I saw a very interesting tweet a long time ago that said that one of the really ways you can upgrade your craft is to move time in the story, to actually use anticipation and flashback. Not necessarily like an entire flashback, but just what is your character coming from? What are they looking back to? What are they looking forward to? And like playing with that in a story that in truth and in our own lives, we rarely just move forward in time. We're often thinking about like, you know, our expectations, which is our vision of the future, and our disappointments, which is our reckoning with the past. And so a lot of times I really think about how my characters are reckoning with the time they are in their own lives, and like also the time that the world around them is in. Are they in sync? Like, are they moving forward in a world that's moving forward with them? Do they want to hold back in a world that they're like, they love tradition, but the world wants progress? And then looking at that as a source of tension in the story between the way that they're dealing with time and the way the story and the world is.
I love this idea of the looking at where they are in time and using that anticipation as a source of tension. That you're making me think of something that I just did a brief reread of, which is in Dune, which is the fight between Paul Atreides and Jamis when he has to, you know, like, hello, no, here I am, the chosen one. And what's interesting in that scene is the way Frank Herbert plays with time. It's happening at a particular point in Paul's life. and where he's a young man, he's approaching a point where he is going to kill for the first time. That is a threshold. That is a time threshold. That's going to be a marker. It's before he killed and after he killed. That's how his world is going to divide. But the other thing that he does in that is that he does these very small flashbacks to before he is in this thing where he's thinking about, my training taught me this. And all of that is setting up this anticipation of the way the scene can go wrong, the ways that it can potentially go right, but mostly the ways it can go wrong. It's looking at the, you know, that he's been trained in this one particular way to go very slow against a shield, and that he keeps making the same mistake over and over again because of his training. And so you've got this contrast of this, his knowledge, his history, compared with the future that he's aiming for, and this anticipation of all the possible paths through which it can go wrong, which is, I think, one of the great things that you can play with time, is letting the reader know, oh, there's more than one path for this. There's more than one path. There's more than one way that this can go wrong. You don't know which of those possible futures you're going to land in.
Yeah. One of the other things going on in that scene is that also plays with time is what my seventh grade English teacher always used to call a magnified moment, where it's really an exchange of blows that takes probably ultimately maybe 30 seconds. I think in the movie it was drawn out to 40 or 45 seconds, but it's still very short, whereas the actual excerpt is, you know, two or three pages worth of material, because every single second, every single step, every single move of a blade is given this momentous weight. And so it is expanding things out and magnifying every little moment that takes place into this huge kind of glorious thing.
I love that. I was thinking about, like, fight scenes and love scenes are two of the ones in which the time in which it's taking on the page and the time in which it was probably taking in the life of the character are so different. And I'm curious, how do you make that moment? Like, how do you make it slow down enough that it feels momentous, but not slow down so much that people are like, wow, I've been on three chapters of this same, like, sword cut, and, like, I wish they would do it already. You know what I mean? Like, is it just, like, a lent? Like, how do you, like, actually make time slow and speed within something?
I think that there's two pieces that you're playing with. One is the character's awareness of time, and the other is the actual amount of time that it takes the reader to experience it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that happens in the example that we were just using is 2 to 3 pages takes several minutes to read. And unless you're listening to it, sometimes 2 speed. But it is that that reader experience of it will slow it down. Sometimes when something is slowed down in ways you don't want it to be, fight scenes that are slow in ways that are not helping the story, it is because you're taking just too long to get us through it. Likewise, you can speed things up by compressing it so that the reader's actual experience of reading it is shorter. Like, physically shorter. But then there's also what the character is noticing. Sometimes you can create a sense of, oh, this took forever, by lingering on the character's experience, feeling all of the things that they feel. The kinds of things that I've been thinking about lately are, you know, what they're noticing, where they feel it in their body. It's not that you have to hit all of these beats, but that each time you hit one of those, you are having the character live that moment again. So, you know, if I have my character picking up a sword, and the first thing that happens is that we describe what the sword looks like, and then the next thing is the character experiences the physicality of picking it up, the weight of it, the heft, the balance. We've now experienced that sword twice. If we think about, this was the sword my father gave me, that's a third time that we're experiencing it. If we think, you know, if we cut through the air, if we try some sample strikes with it, that's a fourth time that we're experiencing it. But all of those are things that probably happen almost immediately for the character. So there's a ways to slow it down, but also to be conscious that sometimes you don't want to slow it down and you want to just pick one of those, the one that is most distinct to the character, the one that is most demonstrative of this specific moment in time.
I think it's interesting because that's making me think about ordering a lot, which like ordering is a function of time, which, or whatever. Sure, I'm going to say it is. Ordering is a function of time.
I think it is. Yeah.
I said so. But I'm thinking like, you know, let's say that the character ends by slicing somebody in half. I don't know if this is what happens, but this is what happens. Then I'm wondering that it's like, if you pick up the sword, slice the person in half, then notice the weight of it, then think about that it's the fact that a sword your father gave you. It's a completely different emotional experience than if you do all that before you hit. So thinking about like what order things happen in is really interesting. I also just really love that there are certain things you can do in prose that are difficult to do in other forms, which is that, like, I always think people in the world of my character probably find them very annoying because every time they say a line of dialogue, they then think for like a long period, half a paragraph of deep thought return line, which is like an interesting, and we can talk at some other time about dialogue and how not to lose the reader when you like have long periods of like epic thought in between dialogue. But in real life, that would be quite irritating unless you think very quickly. But in a story, you know, the reader does want to know what's going on in the character's mind. And so they're willing to like pause with you for a moment because what they're gaining in that moment of time as a reader is worth the pause in the reality timeline of the story itself.
I think on that, why don't we pause for a moment? One of the things that I'm really enjoying about this conversation is that we're talking about using time in so many different ways. We're talking about the sequencing of a story and how that can change, you know, just when a character has a reaction. We're talking about using time as a way of, as an extension of setting. And I'd love to actually dig into that part of it just a little bit more, the idea of time as an extension of setting. I think I've talked about this more on a previous episode, that one of my favorite scenes that taught me so much was from Jane Austen in Northanger Abbey, where we get a character going into a room and describing it first, her experience of it, her interactions with it when she arrives in the middle of the night and it is fulfilling all of her gothic fantasy dreams. And then the next morning when she gets up and discovers that the terrifying scratching sound is actually a rose bush that's beautiful outside the window, and that the secret locked cabinet that had a roll of enciphered paper in it is actually not actually locked. It was open. She had accidentally locked it, and the enciphered paper is actually a literal laundry list. She just couldn't read it because it was dark. But the literal time can cause the character to experience the place and the reader to experience the place in a different way, which gives you essentially two settings for the price of one.
Absolutely, because we associate certain times of day, I think, with certain things like night and danger often go together, which is interesting, too, because if there's a character who's like not feeling steady in their bones until the sun goes down, then that's that's something different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean about the character? What does that say about them? But I often think about like I experience my own body differently walking around based a little bit on time of day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like I am more because it feels like you don't have the 360 view in the same way at night. And so I am more conscious of who's around me and the distance. And those are all thoughts that I'm having and that a character can be having as a way. So then what do they notice? Because we all, the dangers that we view are reflections of our own mentality. And so the dangers that you view in the night are going to be different than the dangers I view in the night. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about that, then that's a great opportunity to maybe get to what are your character's fears or what is your character's fearlessness? You know, where do they feel comfortable? When do they not? When do they feel ill at ease? And I think all of those are like great moments. I think especially, I think that's it. They're especially great when you're trying to get something done plot-wise. You're mm-hmm. like, I need to have the character go to the grocery store because it's like really important later on that they've been there. But it's not interesting at all. So like, but if it's all of a sudden they're going and it's like they've got to go in the middle of the night or they need to go out, you know, in the day, but they hate their appearance, then how does that time actually make something mundane more interesting so that you can hide the plot work that you're doing that will then become more interesting later?
Yeah, and I think a lot of kind of personal physical cycles can go into this as well. Health-wise is what I'm thinking of, since developing depression and on the particular meds that I'm on right now, I am so much better in the mornings and in the afternoons than I am in the evening. And by the time we get to dinner time, there's just not much of me left. And so I will experience the world and people will experience me in very different ways based on what time of day it is as well.
It is interesting how much we are shaped by time. And yet it is also one of those things that I think is hard to convey to readers, like the passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
The way in which someone is different in the morning than in the evening. One of the questions that I'll hear people ask is like, how do I let people know that time has passed? You know, if...
Yeah, I asked Fonda Lee this question a while ago because I think she does such a brilliant job of it in the Greenbone Saga with, you know, the first book takes about a year, the second about 5 years, and the third book covers 20, 25 years of time. And how do you convey that so well? And one of the little tricks she pointed out was that she made sure to always talk about the children as soon as possible after a time jump. Because if the kid that was toddling around and barely verbal last time is suddenly doing his school homework, well, then you know that a certain amount of time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a really interesting shorthand, you know, for me to go back and look through the book and go, oh, yeah, she does do that every time there's a time jump. She starts talking about the kids early on because they will change more than the adults will. And so it makes it more obvious that time has gone by.
I think that actually, interestingly, ties back into what we were talking about the where. How much can you change a place and still have it be recognizable? And like, how much can you change a time? Like when you're changing time, what are the pieces? If you don't have the option to have children, if it is just moving day to night, what are the pieces that change? And those are the things that you flag. Like kids change a lot, but the building doesn't change that much.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going day to night, the light through the window changes a lot, even if nothing else in the room does.
Yeah. The temperature mm-hmm. could change. The sounds that you're hearing outside, whether they're suddenly crickets or you know, something else. There's a lot of sensory details that you can mention that will immediately clue you into the passage of time.
I also think obligations change over time, like from day to night. Like if you're in a sort of traditional, like work during the day is the, like one of the reasons a lot of times writers write late at night and early in the morning is because those are times that people feel that the obligations of life had yet to like come tug on them. And so it's like, is it quiet in some ways, not just the quiet of the actual room, but the quiet of like no one demanding things from you or nobody needing things from you in this moment.
Yeah. That interestingly, that has been one of the things that has been disruptive for me this. And I recognize this sentence before I say it. It's one of the things that has been disruptive for me about teaching my cat to talk.
I mean, there are many, but that's
is that her diurnal cycle is not the same as the humans. So she sleeps during the middle of the day, and then at night when I am starting to wind down, when normally before this I would have been able to have quiet because the rest of the world has quieted, that's when she's like, let's play, let's have zoomies together. Let's use this button board thing and let me mash on it and talk to you. So I have I'm finding that now I'm starting to write during the middle of the day, which has never been a writing time for me, because then those obligations, which is this cat, are quiet.
I need to write when my cat shuts up.
Oh my God. I love her so much, but choices were made.
What I love about that is like, you're not going to get your cat to not be diurnal. Like you can have some stern talks, but I don't think it's going to work. And so also thinking about like, what are the things like children's growth, like a school day, like what are the things that keep that are unchangeable by your character, no matter what they do in the world. These are the inevitabilities of time. At the beginning of the day, they'll have to do this. At the end of the day, they'll have to do that. I was reading Babel.
Yep.
By Arif Kuang. And it's all about school. Like it's a school book for at least the portion that I'm in. And so there's a lot about the school year and like the passage of time in a school year, which the characters are going through so much internally, but they're still like, they have to hit the external, go to this class, be in this place, do this thing by this time. And I think we sometimes forget or ignore or get used to the strictures of time on our lives, but maybe we should not do that for our characters' lives and think about how we can use that as an opportunity for pretension or, you know, fun.
Yeah, that is a fantastic example of great time passage and using time as setting and time to manipulate character. Speaking of time, it is time for us to give you some homework. And it's a really simple one this time. It's similar to the one that we gave you at the beginning of this, looking at the lens of when and where. And this is I want you to change the time at which a scene takes place. If you've got a scene that's set during the day, what happens when you move it to the night? What changes? If it's set in the spring, what happens if you move it to the fall? You don't have to make all of the changes, but what happens if you change the time in which that scene takes place? This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. Your hosts for this episode of Writing Excuses were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dan Wells, and Aaron Roberts. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.